Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You're currently listening to the free version of Let Me Talk.
If you want longer, ad-free episodes, even earlier, head to lmtpod.com to find out how to subscribe.
Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk!
Let me talk!
Let me talk!
One, two...
Manchester City have made it into yet another FA Cup semi-final under Pep Guardiola. Six in a row now and a record for the competition. And City have been to Wembley in every calendar year since 2010, a record they've also extended with that solid, if not spectacular, win against Newcastle. Sometimes you just need one of those games in a high-octane run-in. But as with the Copenhagen game, maybe not ideal for podcasts. Let's find out. This is Let Me Talk. I'm David Mooney. With me is the Athletic City correspondent, Sam Lee. Hello.
Hello. It is a bit of a concern, but I'm sure we'll manage, as always.
there's enough talking points in this. I'm playing it down a little bit. It's not quite Copenhagen levels of nothing happened. But like when you've got a title race that is going to end up with three teams kind of bashing it out, sometimes you just need a game like the Newcastle one where you just get the job done, get out of there and everything's all right, don't you?
Well, it's funny, isn't it, that... that could even be termed a game like that. It felt like that going into it, didn't it? It just felt kind of flat. It felt routine. I suppose maybe because it's the FA Cup and it's not the Premier League, I'm sure Guardiola doesn't feel this way. But I think for a lot of fans, myself included as well, it probably felt like, well, there's not as much jeopardy in it.
Stakes are slightly lower, yeah.
Yeah, the stakes are lower. But it just felt like City were always going to win that game comfortably. When people were asking me about it, I was like, oh, it's nice to have a game, you know, after the derby, after Liverpool, before Arsenal, and then obviously Real Madrid coming up, where you don't know what's going to happen. And it's, you know, there's a lot of pressure and it's a stressful game. It is nice to have one of those, where it does feel like a bit of downtime. But it's interesting that an FA Cup quarterfinal against Newcastle would be that occasion. Obviously, they've got a lot of injuries, haven't they, and their season's gone badly, which is pretty much the biggest reason for that. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Even these kind of... This is one of the bigger matches. But I guess it just goes to show how big the Premier League title races and the Champions League quarterfinals and semifinals have become. That yeah, it was just nowhere near in the event. But again, if they were playing Arsenal or Liverpool yesterday,
different,
it would have been.
Yeah.
So it is mainly down to Newcastle.
Yeah, let's talk about kind of the game management to start with then, because obviously, as you say, it was one of those games where, ultimately City have to win. You want to keep going as far as you can to each competition, so they've got to do their best to go and win it. And then you look at the team that he's named; it's quite a strong lineup, maybe stronger than I anticipated. I'm not really sure. I'm not sure who else could have come in, but I remember seeing the team.
Yeah, well,
and thinking,
that's the thing is. Up until, that is what I would say to everybody, you know, going, oh, well, is he going to make changes? He's going to pick a team and it's going to look strong and he will have still made changes. But to be fair, that Copenhagen team for the home game was like, oh, okay, he's made a load of changes here. Because I really thought that Copenhagen team would basically look like how the team was last night. But he did make loads of changes, didn't he? So yeah, I suppose it was, but then you got the element of they didn't have a midweek game, so there was less pressure to rest players. He almost kind of treats international breaks as if it's like, well, they are going to play. Like, you know, Diaz, Bernardo probably play 90 minutes both times for Portugal or whatever. But he almost treats it as if to say, well, I know they're going to play, but I don't care. Like, this is completely separate. I'm not going to rest my players to balance out what other managers might do, which, you know, like, it seems like there would be a case for that. Like, if you know that you've got players who are going to play both games and you didn't need to play them against Newcastle, then maybe you could give them that time off. But then there'll be players like, obviously, like Grealish is completely separate, isn't he? He's going to be training at City during the international break. But Foden, I don't think, you know, as good as Foden is, and, you know, I'm sure Southgate will be very keen to try him in whatever position. Southgate very rarely plays players in for full 90 minutes in both games, especially in friendlies.
Yeah.
So with Foden, you can see why that was. We spoke to Rodri afterwards, and it is embargoed, but he was quite interested on the idea of the players resting even during their international fixtures, which is really interesting, isn't it? Because we always look at it through the prism of, well, City's the most important thing. And not just us, but, like, do you remember when it was AFCON and the Asian Cup and, you know, Liverpool fans and Spurs fans or whatever were like, oh, hopefully, you know, Salah and Son, they're back as soon as possible and all this kind of stuff. But, like, they want to go and play for their country just as much, if not more so, than they do for City. And obviously at City there will be players who feel exactly the same. But it was quite funny because Rodri was almost like, well, to be fair, I think Spain had got friendlies, but he was like, yeah, we just need to kind of rest in this period and come back healthy. So it was interesting that he thought about it in that sense.
Yeah. And you think of it was Mahrez, wasn't it, as well, where was it last season where Guardiola said about he'd missed out on qualification for AFCON and...
Yeah, two seasons ago when he came back.
He came back, he was sad, yeah. And so, like, we don't think about the impacts that those breaks have and kind of, like, not just the physical side of things, but the mental side of things as well. And then you get, obviously, you get the game that you get yesterday. And it was, I thought, for a game that, there was some jeopardy, not a huge amount of jeopardy, given that City took the lead quite early and kind of managed it fairly well after that. But it felt like they never really got a proper handle on the game. Certainly at 2-0, it felt like it felt as if not that it could get away from them, but it's one of those games where if Newcastle had got back into it and it had finished 2-2 and gone to extra time or whatever, we'd be sitting here going, well, you know, like, these are the sorts of games where in a title run like this, you don't let them go to extra time. You've got to be a lot firmer with your grip on the game, and it never felt like it quite got out of hand. But it felt like it wasn't quite as comfortable as maybe it looked in the end.
Yeah, well, I remember thinking at 2-0. I mean, look, I guess all 2-0 games kind of have a feeling of what if they score.
Yeah, the single most dangerous scoreline in football, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. But the feeling I had, and I said this to our Newcastle guy, was if Newcastle had scored, I feel like City would have gone, oh shit, and then clicked and then scored and made it 3-1.
Yeah.
Because the second half was basically running through the middle and not scoring. Like, there was, like, even, so Foden through the middle was fantastic again, but obviously, like, there was just not, you know, when he backheeled it into space and then ran after it and had the shot, you know, the shot was off target. It was a difficult shot, but, you know, it was that kind of, just that last step with his composure, because he has improved hugely on it, but there's another step to go. There was Doku running through the middle, and he looked fantastic when he was doing that. But again, the decision making wasn't great. And then in the second half, there was more with Haaland, wasn't there? He was running through, and his finishing wasn't good, or he couldn't quite get a shot off. And it just seemed like that was basically how the second part played out. But then again, if you're going to be running through and you don't score, then we come back to where's the ball going? Then they've got the ball, and there's a reason why. It never really felt under control. I mean, for me, that's probably why it felt a bit like... It was a good performance overall. I didn't think it was a great performance. But it was just a bit dull, I think, for that reason. Because it never... Like, City never got the... Because even if it's dull, but City get 3 and then they get 4, then everyone goes home happy and it's fine. But when it's 2-0, the two goals come in the first half and the second half happens, it just feels a bit... Like, it does feel a bit dull.
Yeah, it feels like everyone's wasted their time for the second half. Really. Yeah, it's one of them. It's 2-0 up at half time. You think, oh, well, they'll go on and they could absolutely batter these, and then because nothing else happens, you kind of go, oh, well, that was all right.
Yeah, exactly. And you just go, well, fine. Like into another semi final. But just before we mention that particular stat, which everybody already knows, speaking of running through the middle, did you see in the second half when like Ruben Dias did like a Jeremy Doku, drop the shoulder and turn the other way and burst past somebody? I was like, what's going on? I've never seen him do that. Yeah, and then obviously, I think he pushed up a bit and then lost it, which is probably what you'd expect. But that was unbelievable. But yeah, obviously then you've got the, like you said in the intro, all the semi-finals and going to Wembley every calendar year for the last 14 years, which is mad. But yeah, Guardiola was asked about the 6 semi-finals in a row. And he just said, it's the obvious thing, isn't it? It's the schedule that's kind of caught up with them in the end. Mm. So again, I guess there'll be people listening to this after the draw for the semi-finals is made. But if City get Coventry, they're laughing. If City get Liverpool, tougher. And obviously, that's just obvious. But like, if Liverpool are, for argument's sake, 5-0 up again from the first leg like they were against Prague, and they can rest loads of players on a Thursday night, even though it's obviously a Thursday night, and City have obviously probably not going to win 5-0 at the Bernabeu and rest players in the second leg.
Imagine.
Then you've got that issue. But as I've seen a load of people kind of say on Twitter, you know, City are still in the hunt for another treble after doing the treble last season. Going into April, like this is the time last season when we started to think, oh, they're clicking now, and I'm not sure if they are or not.
Well,
let me ask you about that. But just to be in the hunt is impressive enough. Look, if the wheels fall off, we won't really be talking about that in a month's time. But they seem. I don't know. I still think I think the Real Madrid game. We're all over the place here. Sorry. I think the Real Madrid game will be more like it was 2 years ago than it was last season.
Yeah.
The away game, anything could happen. I think City are much less capable of controlling it unless Kovacic and or Grealish play. And then the home leg, I think City can still do that, what they did last year, but they might be a bit more open, and it might be, for that reason, a bit more like the 4-3. But then you've got to acknowledge that like Fernandinho was playing right back in that game, wasn't he, after about 20 minutes?
So. Yeah, yeah.
But I think it'll be more chaotic than it was last year, for sure.
What I want to ask about, just before we kind of get back into Newcastle and stuff, is that sense of it was this international break last year where we were starting to talk about maybe it's clicked, and I remember distinctly it was Leipzig and then Burnley, wasn't it, ahead of the break?
Yeah,
and in both of those games, we'd said afterwards, Those were great performances, but they were the type of team and the type of opponent that City really liked to deal with. And we wanted to see more from them when they came back. And and then they took Liverpool apart at the Etihad and kind of like, it was like, okay, maybe this is the sense. And that was the point where Guardiola said as well, he was getting a sense that they were going to go on one of those runs as well, which, like we said before, he never says.
Yes.
How do you compare that to this season? Because, again, this season, we get to this point and we go, you know, City haven't been that impressive yet this season. There's been moments and there's been standout kind of performances and things have been good in this way, but, you know, they're still not quite controlling things in this way. Does it feel like it did last season, or are you not quite seeing the signs as much as you were last season?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite seeing the signs, but also it's because of how April and May and June did pan out last year. You're holding them to that higher standard, and obviously it's been, I don't know, I feel like they definitely can, but as I mentioned there with the Real Madrid game, and it won't just be the Real Madrid game, it's kind of Kovacic and Grealish coming back to get them back to that level of controlling games, and then you'd hope that obviously should bring an improvement, and then as well as that, you know, maybe they just go into that battle mode again. You can see what Roger had to say about that midday UK time on Monday, because, you know, embargoes. But as long as they, you know, if they go into that mode, and, you know, it's not just about stopping counter-attacks high up and not giving the ball away as much through Kovacic and Grealish, but, you know, if they do, like against Bayern, Dias is going to make a block, Edison's going to make a save. It's that kind of thing. I'm not necessarily seeing it so far. And look, yesterday was, you know, a fine performance, got the job done. You know, Anfield wasn't. You know, if you go to the Bernabeu and you play like what happened at Anfield, then it's going to be much tougher. But then again, obviously, you know, City can still turn it around in the second leg, even if they were to lose by a couple of goals in Madrid. It would still be on. But obviously, it'd be very difficult. So, yeah, I don't necessarily see it just yet. But I'm definitely not saying it can't happen, because there are reasons to believe that it can. And yeah, I think, you know, a big one is more so Kovacic, because you can see Kovacic just playing well at the moment. But obviously the more important player for City is Grealish, and he's coming back, and obviously he was on the bench yesterday. But you've obviously then got to say, well, he's got to come back and play well. And to be fair, given how he started against Copenhagen, and then to a lesser extent, but still true, against Luton, you can be confident that he is going to come back and do well. But then he just needs to stay fit. And yeah, in terms of battle mode, I think it's him who needs to, you know, he particularly needs to click into that, because that's why Guardiola's been subtly criticising him all season.
Yeah.
Because he's not been happy with his kind of effort levels, broadly speaking, and like taking his eye off the ball a bit. So that's the big two. And then, yeah, the rest of them just have to step up, just generally. But like, again, like Haaland has to step up. Diaz, you know, these guys, the defenders, Ederson when he's back. But then again, you know, you've got Akanji who's playing very well at the moment. And if he were to carry that on, then great. You've got Stones who's been really good when he's been back recently. Walker, yeah, up and down. So Walker will have to make that step as well. But no, I don't see it like I did last year. I remember, so after that Burnley game, because I hate, you know, when people are like asking Guardiola about, oh, can you win the treble or whatever, or at least like insinuating that it's going to be easy. But then I remember after the Burnley game, I wrote, it's normally about now that people start talking about the treble. And it's very strange that City are on for it and no one is really mentioning it.
But it's quite quiet talk.
So yeah. I'm going to mention it. Yeah, so I was like, well, I'm going to mention it because they actually look all right. And they've got to, you know, they will have to continue this click afterwards. You know, I'm going to find that article after this and read it just to see how I kind of worded it. But it was like, yeah, I really don't like the treble chat. But it is normally inevitable. And nobody's talking about it, which is unusual. But again, they should have been last year, I suppose, in hindsight. But yeah, now everyone's talking about it. And yeah,
not quite there yet.
Sure.
Yeah. Just on Grealish quickly, he was obviously in the squad. How close is he? Is it one of those, like that Stone, like time with Stones, where he was just like, he's never coming on, but it's just good for him to be back in the squad sort of thing?
Well, Guardiola was asked that, but he didn't address it. Unfortunately, he just said he's going to stay and train at City during the international break, which is obvious, really. So the thing with that is, it's like, is he ready to go straight back in against Arsenal? So yeah, we just have to
wait to see
with that. Again, in his case, talking about players going on international duty, it's a shame that Grealish isn't in the squad, because you know there might have been scope for his rehab to play, even if it was just 20 minutes in a game. And then you think, is he not in the squad because he's not ready to do that? You know, and it might just be the case that Southgate's got enough other players to look at. So he's like, well, I'm not going to give somebody a place if they're only going to play 20 minutes. I'm going to bring people who can play more. But yeah, you would say he'd be needed against Arsenal. But then I think with Kovacic, which is probably going to finally bring us round to him, again, against Arsenal, who knows what Guardiola's going to do. But if it were to be Rodri, Kovacic, De Bruyne, if he's available, Bernardo, Haaland, Foden, don't mind that so much. If De Bruyne is not, I mean that's perfect, really. If De Bruyne is not available, then Foden in the middle, because fantastic again. But then you're looking for somebody on the left again. And then again, maybe it's Doku. But I feel like Doku's just kind of getting on by default at the moment. I feel like after United, it was all right. We'll shelve you for now. Because it's just not clicking, and that's fine because it's early. But he had to come on against Liverpool because there was nobody else, and Alvarez was awful. And then kind of had to play yesterday again. I suppose Bob could have played, and he did well when he came on. But yeah, I suppose Doku was still kind of clinging in there, so maybe he'll play against Arsenal. But and you'd keep Grealish, because as much as the Arsenal game is obviously huge, if Grealish isn't ready, then you know there's no point in bringing him back, because you're going to need him against Real Madrid in both games.
Coming up after a short ad break, there'll be more discussion about that Newcastle game. We'll focus on Mateo Kovacic, and we'll talk about controlling games in the centre of the park. See you shortly.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Let Me Talk is sponsored by you, the listeners.
The best way to support the podcast is by subscribing via Memberful.
You can pay as little as £2 per month, which gives you early access to all our podcasts ad-free, and they're packed with even more content.
That gives you even more minutes of us to fill up your week.
Subscribing is really easy, and the longer episodes will integrate seamlessly with your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify or Apple. Head over to lmtpod.com for more information on signing up and links to all of our socials.
Let's talk Kovacic. I thought, I may be wrong, but it may be recency bias as well, but I thought it was his best game for City. I noticed this early on, and I couldn't help but notice it every time he did it after that. It seemed like everything he did was more positive than I would expect from a City midfielder. And what I mean by that is the number of times where he picked up the ball in under pressure, maybe with his back to the Newcastle goal, whether he's kind of on the edge of City's box or whether he's kind of a bit further up towards the halfway line, he would pick the ball up facing his own goal. And I would expect a City midfielder, if I see Rodri coming onto the ball in that position, in my mind's eye, what I see is him rolling it back to Akanji or rolling it back to Diaz, or just basically playing the way he's facing. Whereas Kovacic felt like he took a touch, took it around the corner, and then played, kind of ignored the safer pass in order to take the more difficult pass. And it kept coming off and it kept working. There was a moment where he had a simple pass back to Akanji, and he ignored it and turned to Rodri instead. And there was one where he had a simple kind of fairly square pass to Rodri, and instead he turned and played it to Foden a bit higher up. And all the way through that, I'm thinking, I wonder how much of that is under instruction, or how much of that is Kovacic being kind of the more positive, like we've always said, he drives forward and he carries it really well and he always looks for Haaland sort of thing. And how much of that is just his natural sort of game, and how much of it is instruction? Because it feels like maybe against another side, maybe Newcastle are the perfect side to do that against, but maybe against another side it could be a lot more risky.
So yeah, you messaged me, it was only like half an hour in, said that was great from Kovacic again. Again, rejecting the safer pass for a positive one. And so obviously my response to that was, he's playing himself out of the Arsenal game and stuff like that. Because, you know, when you put it like that, you know, he could have gone back to Akanji, but he went forward. And it's like, well, we could be talking about, you know, Doku with stuff like that. You go, he should have gone back. You know, we're talking about Foden in the last minute against Palace. You know, he's driving past his man in the middle, but he should have gone back to Rodri. Like, that's just not in question. So it's just a case of, yeah, what he's been told, what the circumstances dictate. The only thing I would say is, yeah, I think by and large that is his duty. That is what he wants to do. Again, Rodri talked about him after the game, so keep an eye out for that. But there was one time I tweeted about it. So Guardiola with his hand signals, he did the big like calm down thing, like both arms going up and down, and then he was like gesturing left to right, left to right, left to right, and then shaking his fingers of saying, no, like, don't make it like an open game. And that was to Kovacic. I'm pretty sure that was to Kovacic in the second half. So there's obviously an element of, yeah, that's well and good, mate, but, you know, time and the place, rein it in. But, yeah, we have seen that. There was when he came on Anfield last week and Ortega chipped a ball into him that was around kind of chest or throat height, and he brought it down and turned and dribbled with it. You know, that stuff, you know, in that instance is very useful. But then, you know, if he was to try a through ball in behind to Haaland when City just needs someone to keep hold of the ball, then that's not what he should do. So, like, obviously he did play very well yesterday, but just in this specific example of, was he right to be a bit more positive? Should he have been a bit safer? Like, it's obviously the kind of game that City were playing. In fact, this is a good example, because against Bournemouth, they were told to take loads and loads of touches. And I remember, I think he bollocked him at Bournemouth for maybe not taking enough, something like that.
Yeah.
But then again, yesterday, it was a feature of City's game, wasn't it? To get the ball through the middle so they could run. And that was the game plan. So, yeah, I think by and large, he did do it very well. But yeah, if we're talking about, you know, we couldn't sit here and say, oh, he's taking the more positive options, he's not just going sideways, because I think people listening to this would say, you two gone mad.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You spent all season saying that's what you need to do. So yeah, there's a time and a place for it. And I guess it's just the key to it is just understanding it. But again, like, a player like him will be really important in these big games coming up. And you know, if he can find a through ball to Haaland at the end of it, and Haaland can score it, then that's going to be a bit of a match winning difference. But just somebody to put their foot on the ball and drop in next to Rodri, maybe leaving Bernardo a bit higher up, maybe even leaving Bernardo on the wing. Because if you've got Kovacic going in there, you can have De Bruyne in his favourite space, and you've still got Bernardo on the right wing where he's great in big matches, especially. Then yeah, it just helps things a bit more. The key with Kovacic is just to keep him fit, because he's had different injury setbacks this season, but he was always the same at Chelsea as well.
Yeah, niggles, wasn't it? Yeah. It's interesting that kind of like the balance is there to be struck, because I immediately, when you talked to, when you were talking then, I immediately thought of Bernardo in the opening seconds of that Spurs game a couple of years ago that they lost 1-0.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that whole, like, yeah, sure, you can play it, and you've got to play it at the right time, but don't risk it when it's not the right time, sort of thing. And it's like if someone like Bernardo is struggling to know when the right time is to play it through to Haaland,
yeah, exactly,
then like what chances anybody got? But what chances a new signing Kovacic got when his natural game is I want to get it forward as quickly as I can? I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's the Foden thing as well, and it's taken Foden a long time. Obviously, at the moment, it's clicking. Speaking of this kind of thing, actually, there was a tweet I retweeted yesterday. It's by a guy, I think he does a lot of technical coaching with young players, particularly City players. And he said, let me see something. Who's the better footballer? And it was a poll. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what it is that he's trying to see, but I was like, well, I'm going to retweet this and give him more votes, so whatever he wants to see, he can see it. Who's the better footballer? It was Foden or Silva. So now, as it stands, there's about 2,000 votes, and Bernardo's got 52% of the vote. Yeah, Brexit jokes, etc.
Yeah, cursed numbers.
But, like, it's interesting because I don't know what this guy's trying to see, but for me, it's a very obvious answer, and it's just obviously Bernardo Silva. But, you know, ask again in 5 years and it might be Foden. But if you're asking now who's the better footballer, then Bernardo Silva's the better footballer. But again, it's like if somebody wanted to make the argument for Foden, I wouldn't say they were mad. Mm. But yeah, for me, it's just Bernardo. And again, it just comes back to, you know, it's the game intelligence, isn't it? Obviously, in this particular question, he's got way more big game performances, more important performances for City under his belt over the years than Foden has. That's just indisputable. But in this particular sense, it's the game intelligence, and it's knowing what the game needs. But again, you know, you mentioned that Spurs thing then. It does also just go back, especially in that particular moment, to the individual characteristics and traits of the players. So when I asked Guardiola about needing to make 1,000 passes to quieten the crowd down, and his answer was, you know, it depends on who we've got. And then he used that Grealish and Doku example. He said, I know it's a stupid example, but, you know, Grealish gives us rhythm or whatever, but like Doku is a bit quicker, you know, he's more direct, blah blah blah, all this kind of stuff that we know already. And he's obviously saying there, it's the type of player obliges you to play in a certain way, which is obviously then it's up to him as the manager to pick the players when they're all fit to suit what he wants. So, you know, if everyone's fit at the Bernabeu and he picks Doku, then it's like, okay, that is interesting, because you'd imagine he'd want that control from Grealish. Mm. But then when it comes to Bernardo in that moment at Spurs away, when presumably the whole match plan was built around not giving away stupid passes, don't let them counter-attack, you know, only play those passes when the lines are close together so you can counter-press more effectively and not have those counter-attacks. And then all of a sudden you do get that perfect chance to play a through ball. Bernardo is thinking safer because that's how he's wired, and he's thinking more about the team and not giving away those counter-attacks. Whereas Foden might have played that ball and he might have found it.
Might have scored.
And it would have been the right option at that time. But then next time, maybe he's getting the ball and he's looking for it and he gives it away and they counter-attack and they concede, and that's the wrong option. So it's just that kind of, on the one hand, in terms of this particular poll, you've got the decision-making and stuff. And I think overall, Bernardo's is better. I think that's indisputable, really. But then you've also got the element of just when it comes to how Guardiola wants to play and how City do play, it is just that the quality of the players and their natural instincts that other players would have taken that pass on. And obviously it was a big thing last season, wasn't it? City weren't playing to Haaland as much, because when De Bruyne wasn't there, it was Gundogan and Bernardo, and they're thinking, well, we've got to not give away counter-attacks. And Haaland obviously wasn't always happy with that. And speaking about Haaland not being happy, he didn't look particularly happy yesterday either, did he?
Well, we'll come back to that, because just before we do, you've mentioned the Bernabeu a couple of times. Obviously, the Arsenal game is forefront in everybody's mind at the moment. And just to kind of finish off on Kovacic and the control element of everything, there is certainly when you think back to what happened at Anfield, and I remember when I saw the starting lineup at Anfield, I was thinking I wanted to see Kovacic in there and kind of a little bit of a safer approach. Does he offer enough of the control to be able to look ahead to those games at Real Madrid, that game against Arsenal, and go, okay, well, he's now playing his way into that midfield alongside Rodri? Is that the are my feelings ahead of Anfield about wanting him in there to kind of keep things a bit tighter? Is that likely to be reflected, do you think, in the lineups for those two big upcoming games? Because Anfield was the one where Guardiola just didn't do it, and he was on the bench. He was obviously available, and he wasn't used until second half. But then, as everything we've just talked about, he does maybe take the riskier option sometimes anyway. So maybe he doesn't offer that control. Maybe it's just not there as part. Maybe I see him as someone who plays in the centre, and that's his position. But he doesn't offer what City would need a midfielder in that position to offer to actually get that control. So Guardiola looks for something else anyway.
No, I think. Well, the thing is, it's interesting because, going back to Gundogan, if you needed control, you could play Gundogan for control. But if you needed somebody to get in the box and score the goals and not necessarily be so key to the control, then Gundogan could do that as well.
Yeah.
And, like, Kovacic isn't as good as that. So there was a bit of a risk, I suppose you could say, that, you know, let's just say he tries a speculative ball over the top towards Haaland when there's a safer option available. But that kind of goes back to what Guardiola was saying about the quality of the players. But I feel like, you know, if it was between Gundogan and Kovacic, and, you know, there was a world, you know, if Gundogan had a stayed, they would have had both. Then you just pick Gundogan because he's just a better player and he gives you better options. But with all things considered and the players available, it has to be Kovacic in that sense. And you just kind of accept, like you'd accept with Doku in some games, that you're not going to get ultimate control, but
you'll get more of it anyway.
With Kovacic, you're gonna get more of it. It's not going to be Nunes, is it? You wouldn't have thought. It's not going to be Nunes at the Bernabeu. It's going to be Kovacic. But what I would say is, if Grealish is fit and De Bruyne is fit, then it's easy to say. Well, I suppose it would be the team that was certainly the midfielders and forwards that played at Copenhagen away. That would be the team, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. But if Grealish isn't available or De Bruyne is not available, then who's coming in? Is it Nunes, Doku, or is it Kovacic? And, you know, for me, it has to be Kovacic.
Yeah.
He might not always give it to you every second. If he gives you... If you can boil it down in a stupid way, just to make the point, but you know the point I'm trying to make. If it gives you 80% control, then it's better than, you know, Nunes,
yeah,
or Doku, who might give you 40%. Like, it has to be him. But like I say, if those players from Copenhagen away are fit, then it has to be them.
Yeah. How's your Star Wars, by the way?
If not, he's first backup for sure. How's my Star Wars? Not brilliant.
Not great. Because I was just thinking, when Han says to Chewie about getting the Ewoks help, short help's better than no help at all. And that's just where I came from.
Exactly. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. New reference for everyone there. I don't think I've done a Star Wars one on Let Me Talk. Yep, there we go.
No, fair play. And it works. But again, but even that, like, it's not short help. You know, the Doku example was a bit of a red herring because obviously he doesn't really give you control. But Kovacic does, and even if it's not perfect, it's much more than what you'd get elsewhere. And, like, so for example, when you actually talk about Doku, if you were to think, well, let's play Doku on the wing but bring Bernardo into the middle, I don't know, because then you've got, you know, if you're adding up everybody's balanced contributions, then it's less, isn't it, than if you've got Kovacic in the middle and Bernardo on the wing. And again, maybe Guardiola thinks, I need something direct in this game. I want to, you know, run in behind Camavinga or whatever. maybe he goes for Doku, but you know, I would be amazed. But yeah, it's got to be Grealish first, and all the lads from last season. But if not, then Kovacic is the first on the backup sheet, I would say, which doesn't sound particularly. It doesn't sound particularly flattering.
It's quite a backhanded compliment, isn't it?
The other guys, it is, yeah. But the thing is, he's also very close to it. And you know, if Grealish is back fit but not playing well, then Kovacic is the one going in, and then it just kind of means shuffling people around. But then again, if De Bruyne's not back just yet, and we're talking about the Arsenal game, and De Bruyne's not there, and Grealish isn't there, then you know, Kovacic is even more important because it's probably going to be Kovacic and Doku. So yeah.
That's it for the free version of Let Me Talk. There is more for members. Go to lmtpod.com if you want to sign up for those longer ad-free episodes. Sam, what are members getting for the post-Newcastle show?
Yeah, some really interesting stuff, if I do say so myself, on you know Ortega on the pitch, but also off it. So his contract scenario, City's point of view, his point of view, and a bit of a standoff there, which also brings us to De Bruyne's future and a potential standoff in the same sense. And then we're on to Doku, his development at City, and the fact that he's going to have to play and make big contributions towards the end because the schedule is getting crazy. The Spurs game might have to go to the second last game of the season. And yeah, it's crunch time.
That's all for members. Those ad-free episodes are longer and they're out earlier. You can find out more on lmtpod.com.
If you want to send us an email, it's hello@lmtpod.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, so just search for lmtpod on there.
Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time. You wanna hear